Welcome to Shooting the Frisbees with your hosts, Jake and Randy, discussing all things freestyle frisbee and whatever else that comes up. All right.
Welcome to Shooting the Frisbees with Jake and Randy. Hey, Jake, man, how's it going?
Doing very well. How are you, Randy?
I'm doing fabulous. We're going to continue our conversation today with Jeff Felberbaum. But before we go, I always want to remind folks to please give us feedback on our Facebook page or on the website, frisbeeguru.com. And of course, if you want to hear more from us or get updates, sign up for our newsletter, which is in the top right-hand corner of frisbeeguru.com. So with that, Jake, I know you had some more questions for Jeff.
Yeah, so he mentioned the Craze Disc Dance project, which I'd heard someone else mention it, but I had never heard any details about it. So he brought it up again. So I had to know more. So that's the second time I've heard someone mention Craze Frisbee Dance Project, but I've never heard of it before. So was it really just a traveling show, or what was it?
Well, the object was to create a show and to create a kind of a, not just one show, but an ability to bring Frisbee into a performing context, to develop it for all kinds of different venues that were outside of the sport, a venue and outs, right? So that it was for, you know, it's purely, it was, we got into this, we did this, a trailer for a video, for a movie that was produced by Harry Belafonte called Beat Street. So it was a breakdancing video. And so we were in the trailer with all these different breakdance performers doing pieces of our routine that we had developed at the time. And it was kind of like it was a Frisbee dance routine. We called it disc dance, right? But we also performed at a juggler's convention. We performed at dance concerts with a small dance troupe, kind of a gymnastic dance troupe that a friend of ours that had put together in New York, and also at this very small dance concert I remember training for. We were then also part of this troupe of breakdancers, and there was this one guy, it was really cool. His name was Slow Motion, and he would do like slow motion roller skating. So we were part of this troupe that was of mostly breakdancers that were doing, you know, we did some kind of nightclubby kinds of things and bar mitzvahs, and we did this one bar mitzvah where Cray and I were doing this, we did this putting on the Ritz thing with dancers and tuxedos and hats and canes, and it was a trip, man. We worked with a jazz dance choreographer who helped us put together one of our routines where every beat of the song that we performed to had a corresponding movement with or without the disc. So while Cray was doing a combination with a disc, I was doing a dance combination that mirrored his Frisbee combination on the other side of the stage. And we were constantly moving and dancing, and it was amazing.
Did any of this ever get caught on video? Is there any record of it?
Yeah, we've got, Cray's got it. I used to have copies of it, but I don't have those anymore. But Cray's got this stuff. Yeah, he's got this stuff. And also, you know, I don't think that I don't know if Zen and the Art of Freestyle Frisbee ever made it onto DVD. I mean, I don't know if it was ever transferred onto DVD, but you know, he and Pat Rabdow have that stuff. And that stuff is, you know, it doesn't have Cray and I doing our thing, but it has Cray and Pat doing some really nice performance stuff that they were working on, which was different than what Cray and I did. Yeah, that stuff should definitely be treasured.
I really like that direction of the performance. Not that the technical shouldn't have a place to live, but I really think the performance, getting the audience engaged with what you're doing instead of vice versa.
Oh, Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the secret really is, I mean, really, the secret is to make it be about the audience, not about you. You could do that with nothing. You could do that if you got no skills. If you have one skill, you can do it. Two skills, you could do it. We as freestylers, and you're not going to hear me include myself in that bunch very much, but I will write, well, maybe you will in the future, I don't know. But for the last year, I've been really using different language to describe my participation with this activity a lot. But we as freestylers have vastly more than we need to do very, very good things for the sport, for others, for the world, and for just for human expression. Freestyle puts the kind of fun stuff, the trick stuff, the interesting stuff, the skill stuff that is of performance quality, it puts it in a box that then really, the box reproduces itself because everybody is doing it in the same context and preparing to do it in the same context. So after a while, it all starts looking the same, even though it's always obviously a little different.
Jake and I have been having this discussion about, there's the difference between performing and competing. And competing really does kind of put it into that box. Sure. So it's like either you're going to perform or you compete. And so there's that, how do you combine those two? Conversations we've been having, Jake, about that, it's kind of fitting into this whole idea here.
Yeah, totally.
I can imagine.
So I know that you and John Dwork had quite the partnership early on. And can you talk a little bit about that partnership with John and what that journey was like?
When you ask me questions and I start laughing, it's rather telling, isn't it? It's telling for me. It's like, it's just, where my mind goes when you bring up these subjects is just, it's pretty funny for me. We did a lot of demos, relatively speaking. We didn't do as many as we would have liked, but we did a lot more than I ever did with anybody else. And John had a lot of contacts, and and I was very willing. And we got really lucky one summer, which is that we connected with someone that had us working several times a week in New York City all summer long, which helped us prepare for tournaments. Because all we did was we did a big show, but we, very combined variety show, but we always practiced our routine. So, and we practiced performing in front of people, and so it was great, great practice. The first thought that popped into my head was how my aunt and uncle in California, Lenny and Herman Carr, who were gracious enough to host us at their house in Santa Ana for our John and I first trip to California in 1978 or the winter of 77 into the spring of 78. They hosted us. They were supposed to host us for like a month or something. And we were going to train and get ready for Santa Barbara and Santa Cruz and all this stuff. And after about a week, my Uncle Herman comes up to me and he's like, Jeff, here, take this money. You guys, go get it. Go to Venice and get a hotel room. All right, go down there and have. I'm like, Uncle Herman, I can't take this money from you. He's like, take the money. I'm like, well, what's the matter? What's going on? He says, that John, he's driving us crazy. You got to take the money. Take the money and get out of here and go to Venice. We can't take it anymore.
Goodness.
Wow. So my aunt and uncle kick us out because they said that John was driving them crazy. And John was a bit of a nudge back then. So anyway, we go to Venice. We take the bus to Venice and we get off the bus. And I just, with my youthful exuberance, I'm 17 years old, and I just run across the street. And this motorcycle cop pulls up and goes, I can tell by the way you crossed that street that you're not from around here. And he proceeded to write me, $75, $150, $200 ticket for jaywalking, it was like, Toto, you're not in New York City anymore. So many stories. And I told this story to somebody else too. John was an amazing, amazing player. And one of the things that stands out the most for me is in 1978, when he dropped. It's not like he choked. He didn't choke. John Dvorak never choked. He just didn't hit. He just didn't have like his best day in the bowl that day. And he dropped like whatever, I don't know, his fall catch, which was just extraordinary. Have you guys ever seen it?
Yes.
Donnie Rose is the only other person that I ever saw do the fall. And I tried to do it once in Rochester with Donnie and Joey or something, and I ended up hurting my back. It still hurt today. I lay on the field out there for hours after falling, trying to do that goddamn throw, catch. Oh, my God. And I ruined my back doing that. And John actually hurt his back doing it, too. But that catch, he didn't catch it that day. And, oh, it hurt. But in 1978, my dream as a teenager, really I only had three things in the world that I wanted. I wanted a girlfriend. And I wanted to get my black belt. And I wanted to get to the Rose Bowl. I never in a million, zillion, trillion years thought I would ever win the freestyle at the Rose Bowl. But I wanted to get to the Rose Bowl. That was it for me. You know, John and I got to the Rose Bowl in 1978, and that was just amazing. And, you know, my girlfriend joined us out there. I had my first love. and the following year, I got my black belt. And just to make it there, and then that was just astonishing, right? Whatever we did. And then we're in the semis, and we win our semi pool. I mean, we might have known we were going to do well, but because we had been winning everything that year, we're like, oh, my God. First, it was, oh, my God, we're in the Rose Bowl. Then, oh, my God, we're in the finals. We made it to the finals. This was too big for us, though. I think this was too big for us. We were like, huh, let's win it, right? Like, but we didn't really believe it, right? This is too big for us. We can't do this. We knew, I think inside myself, I knew that we couldn't, or that it was just too big. It was like, no way. What am I thinking, right? But we got really good at this winning thing, because we won and won and won and won and won. And a lot of it was based on, you know, John was incredibly, incredibly creative and inventive and quirky. And you know, he convinced me to get into, to learn how to twirl or pediddle, depends what you want to call it. But John called it twirling. Pediddling was, you know, it was a derogatory term. It wasn't nice. And, you know, John's twirling was a high art. He took it to a very high level anyway. You know, you could throw him a disc and he would delay it with his fingertip. Basically, he was able to get so much control doing what he did. And then we would build these ridiculous, crazy he would call it body sculpture. And we would do these moves that where we, you know, create a sculpture and then pass it to the other one and then pass it to the other one and then set up a catch, a double catch or something. And, you know, people were like, what the bleep are these guys doing? But they didn't know, but it looked cool. And it was different, and it helped us to win.
So as an aside, I have an appointment with John sometime this summer to film him doing some of his unique pediddling tricks. So
no.
Looking forward to that. Yeah, he contacted me on Facebook about 2 weeks ago and said, oh, I'm going to be in Portland, and I'd like to do this.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Wow.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, you're in for a treat. Don't call it pediddling, though.
Well, that's what we all call it now.
Really?
But it doesn't sound diminutive these days now. It's just funny how things change. So I have a question for you about the 1980 Rose Bowl and your partnerships with Cray and Evan. So obviously we've been talking a lot about Cray, and he's amazing, a huge influence on you. Other people have mentioned Evan David as well as one of the amazing players from back in the day. But I just wanted to ask you, how did you guys decide to hook up as a team that year? What did you come away with from that partnership? How did it impact you?
My goodness. They had been doing a bunch of stuff together prior to my asking them, I think, if I could play with them. And for me, it was this choice to try and do something for the love of it and for the art of it, because they were the two most artistic players that I knew, and the ones that I admired the most that were around. I mean, I admired lots of people for lots of different reasons. Really, I had an extremely difficult time in my relationship with Donnie, and it was the kind of situation, and I'm sure he would tell you differently, but it was a situation where many, many people in my life as I was growing up were very good friends of mine to me, but I did not really know how to be a friend to anybody else. And I was very self-centered and selfish and all these ways that really made me miserable. And I always thought it was everybody else doing it to me. And so I had a very hard time with this partnership with Donnie. And even though we were successful, for me it was like, I don't care about winning. Let me try to do something that makes me feel good. Because I could not feel good. I didn't feel good doing what we were doing, except, sometimes we would perform and we did. It felt really good because we did some really good work together.
So the situation is, in 1980, you and Donnie play together a lot. You're pretty much partners.
We did.
Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
So then at some point you decide you would rather play with Cray and Evan?
Well, towards the end of the season, right?
Okay.
Near the Rose Bowl, I left Donnie flat is what I did. I bailed on him at some point. I was like, you know what? I'm not playing with you. This is a hard moment for me to be looking at this, because it was one of the things that I did that I'm not proud of at all. And for Donnie to play with me in those days, really, he was doing me a favor, because he really had it. His technical genius and artistic genius was exactly what I needed to be on the other side of the field for me to be able to shine, right? Because I didn't have any of the stuff that he had. So we were well matched, but I could not have a relationship really with anybody. I was not capable of having a real relationship, adult relationship with anybody, least of all one where you really had to work hard. And Donnie really was a very tough taskmaster, and I was a lazy guy. I mean, I worked hard, but don't try to get me to work on something that I don't want to work on. In other words, improving my game, really at its core. I did not want to work on the fundamentals, and that's why those guys were so much better than me.
It's interesting, because when we talked to Donnie, he said a lot of nice things about you, and one of the things that he said is that you were the driver behind finding all the demos and the shows, and what some of the things that he enjoyed most about that era was going and performing for people, and that you were the one that led the charge for that.
I'm not surprised that he has nice things to say about me, because that's the kind of guy he is, and I have nothing but good things to say about him. Anyway, so I wasn't very nice to Donnie back then, and anyway, so I really admired what Cray and Evan were doing, and always just really, I mean, Evan,